Villano v. Astru. Ms. Johnson.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Nastasia Johnson on behalf of Plaintiff Debbie Villano. In this case, the ALJ's decision contained multiple errors, which caused his decision to be extremely confusing. The ALJ determined that Ms. Villano was not disabled, but premised his decision primarily on his own personal beliefs rather than under the law, and this violated Social Security rulings 96-7P, 96-8P, and 021P. Opposing counsel in brief presented numerous facts and underlying rationale that the ALJ did not provide in his decision, demonstrating that on its face, the decision cannot stand scrutiny. Thus, the ALJ's decision is based on three main errors which require remand. First, the ALJ's credibility determination failed to provide any underlying reasoning as to why he found Ms. Villano not entirely credible. As background, Ms. Villano alleged that she had a limited ability to sit for more than 1 hour and had crying spells 3 times per week. These were based on medically determinable impairments, as she had bilateral osteoarthritis of her knees, edema, morbid obesity, depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. The ALJ determined that Ms. Villano's medically determinable impairments could reasonably cause her alleged limitations, but that she was not entirely credible. To explain why she was not entirely credible, the ALJ provided a 4-sentence credibility analysis. In his credibility analysis, he stated that claimant can perform light housework at her own pace, goes out with family occasionally, can drive for short distances, and can sit for less than 1 hour. These were such limited activities of daily living that only support Ms. Villano's alleged limitations of a limited ability to sit and crying spells. This was the entirety of the ALJ's decision, 4 sentences. When you look outside of the actual credibility determination, the ALJ does state that he rejected Ms. Villano's alleged limited ability to sit due to a lack of objective medical evidence. He stated that there was no evidence to support any limitation in Ms. Villano's ability to sit for more than 6 hours out of an 8-hour day. First, as this court held in Peterson v. Chater, a credibility determination is a specific analysis, and no other portions of an ALJ's decision should double for that analysis. However, if this court finds that that lack of objective medical evidence was the reason why Ms. Villano was not entirely credible, this was an improper basis. As this court held in Pope v. Shalala, when an ALJ rejects alleged limitations, they may not be based solely upon a lack of objective medical evidence. Pain and pain on sitting are not often objectively verifiable, which is why Social Security regulations ask ALJs to look at all available evidence, including medical evidence, treating and non-treating sources, and statements from the claimant on how her symptoms affect her ability to work. That was the entirety of the ALJ's decision. And thus, the ALJ credibility determination was insufficient as he failed to set forth any underlying rationale for this court to understand why he found Ms. Villano not entirely credible. The second reason why the ALJ's decision was improper in this case was that his residual functional capacity assessment was based on his own personal beliefs, and he made an independent medical determination. Plaintiff's treating physician, Dr. Sirwaka, opined that Ms. Villano was limited in both sitting and standing due to edema, morbid obesity, and osteoarthritis of her knees. In contrast, Dr. Wenzler, the state agency physician, opined that Ms. Villano was not limited in either sitting or standing, and that she could do both activities for 6 hours out of an 8-hour day. The ALJ took these two contrasting opinions and threaded the needle between them. He accepted Dr. Wesler's opinion that Ms. Villano could sit for 6 hours out of an 8-hour day, but rejected that same doctor's opinion that she could stand for 6 hours out of an 8-hour day, and instead found that she could stand for 2 hours out of an 8-hour day. The only reason that the ALJ gave in his decision for rejecting Dr. Wenzler's opinion that she could stand for six hours out of an 8-hour day or sit was that there was a lack of objective medical evidence, as I already discussed, was an improper basis. It seems that the only reasoning left is that the ALJ personally believed that obesity, osteoarthritis, and edema could only cause pain and limitations on standing rather than sitting. Social Security ruling 021P makes clear when obesity is combined with musculoskeletal disorders, it not only affects standing and walking, but also sitting. The ruling does not distinguish upon more pain with prolonged standing and walking than it does with prolonged sitting. The only way the ALJ in this case could have rationally rejected Ms. Villano's alleged limitation to sit is if there was a medical opinion to support his decision that those impairments would only cause limitations on standing but not sitting. Or he could have called a medical expert to testify to that fact. In this case, the ALJ did neither. He instead based his decision on his own personal beliefs rather than on any medical evidence to support his opinion. Finally, the ALJ's Step 5 finding was an error as it contained a few errors. First, the VE testified, the vocational expert testified, that Ms. Villano acquired the skill of judgment from her past relevant work as a van driver. Based on this, the ALJ found that Ms. Villano could perform jobs as a production worker, an interviewer, and an information clerk. As we discussed in brief, Social Security ruling 8241 makes clear that skills and aptitudes are two different things, and the ability to use sound judgment or judgment, as the VE testified to, is more akin to an aptitude than a skill. While the lower court was correct that Ms. Villano was a younger individual and that transferable skills is ultimately not an issue, in this case, it's not harmless error that the ALJ found that Ms. Villano had transferable skills because he specifically relied on that skill to find she could perform those other jobs. If he found that she did not have a skill, it's unknown whether or not he would have found that she could perform those same jobs. This is something that we just do not know, and shows further why the ALJ's decision was extremely confusing.
Judges like to think judgment's a skill, not an aptitude.
Judgment's a...
Don't you think?
Perhaps. But judgment is also something that is probably useful in all jobs, be it a lawyer, a van driver, an information clerk. But even if it is a judgment, it's still the ALJ's decision that she had transferable skills was not harmless error because he specifically relied on that. Looking back and deciding it was irrelevant does not give this court any understanding on why the ALJ found that or what he was thinking when he made that decision. Also, the ALJ made a significant error in the number of jobs that he found. The vocational expert testified that of those three jobs in the regional economy, that there was approximately 1,500 jobs that Ms. Villano could perform. In contrast, the ALJ in his decision found that there was approximately 15,000 jobs. Now, it could be a typographical error, but it doesn't appear to be exactly 10 times more. So where the ALJ got these extreme differences in numbers, we just do not know. And what is most important is the ALJ found that 15,000 jobs was a significant number of jobs at Step 5 to find Ms. Villano was not disabled. But whether or not he would have also decided that 1,500 jobs was a significant number is also unknown. It again goes to the confusing nature of the ALJ's decision. At the multiple errors at Step 5, we do not know what he was thinking when he made these errors, and these need to be corrected as Ms. Villano deserves a hearing with a well-reasoned decision. If Your Honors have no further questions, I will yield the podium.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you.
Ms. Kleinman.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Ann Kleinman on behalf of the Commissioner. This case is not nearly as confusing as Ms. Villano suggests. She had originally sought review because she thought there were four things that the ALJ should have included in the RFC finding and didn't. That was... sleep apnea or insomnia, hand limitations, crying spells, and a limited ability to sit. Her reply brief narrowed that focus down to just two issues. She admitted that the sleep apnea and the insomnia and the hand problems were not medically determinable impairments, and therefore those are no longer at issue. That leaves us with the other two reasons, the crying spells and the limited ability to sit. With regard to the crying spells, Ms. Villano argues that the ALJ failed to follow Social Security ruling 96-8P in evaluating those crying spells. Social Security ruling 96-8P says that an ALJ must consider all limitations that a plaintiff has regarding a medically determinable impairment. But that's the catch. The crying spells or depression was not a medically determinable impairment in this case. There were no objective findings of depression, no psychological testing was performed, and the state agency psychologists who reviewed the record concluded there was not a medically determinable depressive disorder. A medically determinable impairment cannot be established simply by a claimant's allegations. So, because there was no medically determinable impairment of depression or crying spells, the ALJ was not required to consider this or discuss this in his decision, and the ALJ was not required to incorporate limitations from it in his RFC finding. That leaves us with the very last issue, which is her ability to sit. And in this regard, Ms. Villano makes several allegations, mostly challenging the way in which the ALJ evaluated her inability to sit. She argues, first of all, that the ALJ's credibility determination was only four sentences long. That's simply untrue. The ALJ's credibility determination and analysis was contained throughout the entire decision. There are no rules with which an ALJ must write a decision, no formatting rules, nor organizational rules. There's nothing that says an ALJ has to discuss things in a particular order or on a particular page. Ms. Villano suggests that the ALJ only looked at a very or made a very brief discussion, but if she looks at the whole decision, the ALJ discussed all the things that an ALJ should discuss in evaluating credibility. The ALJ discussed her daily activities. He discussed the factors that precipitated and aggravated her pain, which was prolonged standing and walking, prolonged sitting. The ALJ discussed the opinions rendered by the state agency physicians. The ALJ discussed the lack of adverse medication side effects. And the ALJ discussed the fact that the objective medical findings did not support a limitation on sitting.
What about the argument that the ALJ simply misinterpreted this expert opinion about, or I guess there were two expert opinions about her limitations to 6 hours of sitting or standing as either or?
Well, as a matter of fact, the one opinion that Ms. Villano cites doesn't really exist. It's not an opinion. Dr. Sirwatka, in fact, said he was unable to evaluate her functional limitations. So he did not render an opinion regarding her ability to sit. All he did was recite what she had told him. So that's not an opinion. That leaves the only other opinion of record, which was rendered by the state agency physicians, Dr. Wensler and Dr. Sands, and they both agreed that she could sit for 6 hours a day.
So it wasn't a sit or stand?
No, it was not a sit or stand. The ALJ found that she could only stand and walk 2 hours a day. The ALJ actually rejected the state agency physician's opinion that said she can stand and walk 6 hours a day. ALJ said this is because of the medical evidence. In contrast, he said the medical evidence does not support such a limitation on her sitting. So there was no inconsistency. Ms. Villano really loses sight of the big picture here. Her primary impairment is knee pain, which results in an inability to stand and walk. And the RFC's, the ALJ's RFC finding incorporates those limitations. Most of her other arguments deal with problems that aren't really, that she didn't really seek treatment for. She asked the court to take notice of the dizziness and blurred vision that she had, but yet she admitted she no longer had blurred vision, and the dizziness only occurred when she stood up really fast. She complains that the ALJ didn't discuss her side effects, but he in fact did discuss the side effects in his decision, and said she didn't have any adverse side effects. That was from her treating physician. Dr. Sirwatka said she had negligible medical medication side effects. With regard to transferability of skills, she takes issue with the VE's testimony. But based on her age and her education and her work experience, transferability of skills is immaterial. When you're 49 years old, and you can do sedentary work and you have a high school education, it doesn't matter whether you have transferable skills. It doesn't matter whether you've ever worked a day in your life. Ms. Villano argues that the VE relied on transferable skills in identifying the jobs. That actually doesn't make sense because the VE only identified unskilled jobs. You can't do an unskilled job, or skills are not required in unskilled jobs, so the VE could not have relied on that transferable skill in identifying unskilled job. Now, it is true that the ALJ, for whatever reason, misstated the numbers of jobs that the VE identified. The VE identified a little over 1,500 jobs, not in the national economy, as Ms. Villano suggests, but in the regional economy. For whatever reason, the ALJ seemed to have multiplied this by about 10. And instead of 1,500, he said 15,000. But that's irrelevant. Because 1,500 is still a significant number of jobs. Now, in her reply brief, Ms. Villano argues that that isn't a significant number of jobs, or that it's unclear whether it's a significant number of jobs. But that is the first time she has raised this issue, and therefore that issue is waived. Moreover, that's it. If you don't have any further questions, I'll sit down.
Thank you, Ms. Kleinman. Ms. Johnson?
Your Honor, I'd like to address opposing counsel's last point first. The ALJ did rely on the vocational expert's testimony that there was a transferable skill. If Your Honor would look at the administrative record at page 92, prior to hearing, the vocational expert testified that there was judgment from her past relevant work as a van driver. Now, if you look at the ALJ's decision on page 18 or 32 of the appellate's appendix, the ALJ specifically said the vocational expert was asked if any occupations exist could be formed by an individual with the same age, education, residual functional capacity as the claimant, and which requires skills acquired in claimant's past relevant work. The ALJ specifically relied on that past relevant work transferable skill to find that Ms. Villano could perform those three jobs. And to address the significant number of jobs argument, Your Honor, I was responding to opposing counsel's argument that 1,500 was not a significant number of jobs. However, she cites to Lee versus Sullivan for the proposition that 1,400 was a significant number. However, this court has not set any bright line rule as far as how many numbers of jobs is significant, but merely affirmed in Lee versus Sullivan that 1,400 was a significant number. In this case, the ALJ needs to go back and decide if 1,500 would be a significant number. We do not know. 15,000 versus 1,500 is a big difference. And whether it be in the regional or national economy, it's something that we do not know, and we cannot guess at the ALJ's reasoning for why he came up with those numbers. Finally, crying spells, the ALJ never addressed in his decision at all. Dr. Scully, consulted examiner commissioned by Social Security Administration, specifically diagnosed Ms. Villano with depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Those are medically determinable impairments that could cause crying spells. And finally, a credibility determination is a specific analysis, as I previously argued. This court held in Peterson versus Chater that no other portions of an ALJ's decision should double for that. And even if this court were to accept opposing counsel's argument of the, I see I'm out of my time.
You can certainly conclude.
Precipitating aggravating factors such as prolonged sitting and standing only go towards Ms. Villano's credibility that she had limitations. Thank you very much. If Your Honor would please reverse the decision and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.